This week on the Out of Chicago podcast, it's Finding the Photographer's Vision with Julie Osorio. Well, we just wrapped up the Out of Chicago Winter Conference, and I'll be honest, you know, I don't know. It was so much work putting this thing together. And I'm thinking, man, you know, we already have a great summer conference. Why do we have, what was I thinking? We have like four conferences now. This is out of control. I don't know. And I was thinking, I don't know how this is going to go. And as soon as people started showing up for the winter conference, as soon as classes started going, I realized, oh man, I love this. The people, the Out of Chicago community, I love you guys. It's amazing. And I was just so amped up during the whole thing. And afterwards, I'm just like, oh yeah, we got to do this. We got to do this every year. We got to do the winter conference every year. This is going to be great. And we got all these great ideas for next year and make it even better. And people loved it. And I just keep getting emails from people how much they loved it. The next morning, I woke up after spending the entire day doing the conference and staying out late. We did our pizza party and everything. I woke up at like 6 the next morning and ran every single one of the surveys that people did. And yeah, just love reading through everyone's comments and just so many positive comments. And really the idea behind the winter conference was that it's Chicago photographers and it's a lot of photographers that maybe haven't taught before. So I was a little bit like, oh, I know these guys are really good photographers. I'm just not 100% convinced that they're going to give a great presentation. And I shouldn't have worried at all. The presentations were phenomenal. The reviews that everyone got, phenomenal. And I don't know. I mean, it just reminds me how much I love this community and how much I love the people that put all this hard work into this. I suppose I could say the same thing. Thank you to Melinda and Michelle for all the work that they did. I said that at the conference, if you were at it, it's like in the past, I've always been the one up late at night, like, oh man, I need to print out a couple more badges, or someone just signed up, I need to print out their schedule. And then I'd be up till 1 a.m. and then drive down to Chicago and, you know, be down there at 5 a.m. is like, oh geez. And I think I went to bed at like 7 o'clock the night before this because they were taking care of everything. So that's been great. So thank you guys. And thank the whole community. The winter conference has just got me totally amped up again. But this week we're kind of, I don't know, now that I say it, it just sounds like it's just a huge advertisement for everything we're doing. I hope that's not the way it comes across, but we're starting to shift gears here at Out of Chicago, looking forward to the Portrait Conference. It's April 9th and 10th. And, oh, did I say that right? Is it April 8th? Yeah. Do you see how crazy this is that we have so many things going on? I can't even keep it straight. I had to pause it, go back and look. It is April 8th and 9th. April 8th is Lindsay Adler, the kickoff Friday night. April 9th, we've got classes and photo walks all day. Julie Osorio is going to be one of our speakers there, and he's doing a photo walk as well. He's our guest today on the show. Like I said, we're talking about finding the photographer's vision, and that's really cool. He's been doing a lot of deep thinking about photography and how it relates to his life and his business, and that's what he's going to be going into and talk about the class and what he's going to offer you guys at that class. So April 8th and 9th. And then on the 10th, actually, we have all-day workshops if you're interested in doing that. And there are still some spots available. We have all-day workshops with Nick Page from the Improved Photography Podcast, Tom Rouse, one of the most decorated and respected photographers from the Professional Photographers of America Association. And we also have Mark Serrano, who was just on the podcast last week with Michael Novo, and Steve Nielsen, who teaches off-camera flash. So those four guys are all giving day-long workshops where you're going to be in there, hands-on, shooting, editing, doing it all. So if you're interested in any of those topics, you want to get on that. You want to get on those Sunday all-day workshops. They're going to be a lot of fun. So the Portrait Conference, it's a brand new thing for us, but I'm kind of got this feeling now where it's like, yeah, you know, I might be a little nervous about it, but it's going to be great. Just like the winter conference was. Like I said, I'm like, oh, what are all the things we could do next year for the winter conference to make it even better? So to those of you that made it, thank you. To those of you signed up for the portrait conference, we got a lot already. And if you're not, go to outofchicago.com and you'll find links to the portrait conference there. And you can sign up now and reserve your spot in all of those classes. But I feel like I just keep going on and on. Here we go. We're going to talk to Julio Shorio. This guy, you know, when I get on the podcast with him, it's just like going back and forth, hanging out with a good buddy. I love this guy, and you're going to love all the insight that he's going to give you into everything he does. So here we go, Julio Shorio. All right, I'm here with our good friend, Julio Shorio. He's a Panasonic Lumix luminary professional photographer for, what'd you say, 11, 12 years? What'd you say, 13 years?
I've been a professional photographer now. It's going to be 12 years. It's actually, it'll be 11 years, sorry, this year.
11 so. Years. Yeah, he was at our show last year, the Summer Out of Chicago show. He was amazing. Everyone loves him. And welcome to the show, Julio.
Thanks, man. Thanks so much for having me, Chris.
Or G. I don't feel... What am I... I'm supposed to call you G? What's
the
deal? You
can call me... I started going by G because it was easier for people, but Julio is just as good.
All right. Julio, sure.
It wasn't... It was never G for gangster or anything. It was just like...
Yo, G.
Ever since I was a kid, I'd be like... Julio? I'm like, oh, just right. Call me G for crying out loud.
right, exactly. You know. So, all right. Well, I'm calling you Julio, but today cool. We're talking... Finding the Photographer's Vision, and this is a new class you have, and it's kind of a whole new way you've got of thinking about photography, and I'm really interested in this because I've kind of been feeling some of the same things you were talking about earlier, so I think we're going to have a good talk about that and see all the new things you got coming up this year. So tell us, first of all, what's the whole idea behind this, Finding the Photographer's Vision?
So Finding Photographer's Vision was something that I developed through much pain and agony, and it was all self-designed in my brain, you know, the pain and the agony is never real, but I was creatively blocked for a while, like for a few years, and I was like, man, this is not really feeling good. I'm creating a body of work. It's a collaboration because with the clients I work with, and that work is beautiful, but how much of that work is actually my true voice? And I couldn't really say. So I was like, okay, well, what kind of photography do I want to do? And I didn't have an answer. And this happens to me about every 5 or so years. So, I mean, you know, you work so much on the business side, and then you kind of forget about the art side. And it's like, after a while, you got to put the brakes on stuff. So I put the brakes on everything. I've been using one camera, one lens for all my personal work, shooting just black and white, and basically redefining myself as an artist. So who am I as an artist, and who am I as a person, and starting there and then going out forward. And I developed Finding Photographer's Vision at the same time I was developing some other educational resources, actually like a podcast and some other stuff. So I'm super, super excited to give it to everybody.
Yeah. Now, how did you come up with, so basically what I'm seeing a little bit more of you is street photography, a little more black and white. Like you said, it's one camera, one lens. How did you decide that's the direction you wanted to go? Did you sit down? Did you kind of like, I mean, if it's me, I'm like, I'm going to write down every single thing that I'm thinking about and figure out which ones, you know, do it for me. How did you find that direction, or are you still finding that direction?
Well, I think we don't really know if we're on the right path until you pause and look back down the path. So I'm only, you know, I write a lot. I write at least 1,000 words every morning as I'm waking up and kind of got that my mindset there. But, I kind of would write and kind of get some ideas down, even if it's good or bad, it doesn't matter. Just kind of getting that junk out of my brain.
Are you saying you're writing for a blog, or you're writing for yourself?
Well, I was writing mainly for myself, and this is how the Finding Photographer's Vision course came up. Initially, I thought I was going to be a book, and I was like, let me just figure out, you know, what I need to do. And then, you know, you write a little, and then you go out and you practice, and you take some action, even if the action is not perfect. And It's totally not going to be perfect when we're figuring things out. It never will be. But taking some action, so I go out and shoot a little. I'm like, okay, this feels good. This don't feel good. I have a vision file that I reference, looking through my vision file and seeing how my images kind of fit in with the images that are inspiring to me. And that's kind of like, that's like the basic process over and over. And I started off as a street photographer. So that's really where my photographic heart and mind live is on the street, because that's, you know, art for the people, by the people. And I think it's honest and pure.
Yeah, because last year when we had you at the show, it was like, oh, we've got your cinemagraphs, you're doing mm-hmm. video, you're doing, and I'm like, oh man, this is great. And then all of a sudden you're like, well, I'd love to lead a photo walk too to Wicker Park, and you start showing all your street photography stuff. I'm like, man, there's a whole other side of you that we haven't seen. So I love that, and I love Thanks. that you're going down that path even more. What's the podcast that you're talking about?
The podcast is called Creator's Path. And it's based off of what I've been writing. So it's a series of monologues, and it's also going to be a series of interviews with creative professionals that I've just known for over the years that are doing stuff on the high end. I mean, I got friends that do all sorts of stuff, and not just photography. I'm talking about, it's called Creator's Path because it's not just photography. I'm talking about creative directors, designers, musicians, producers, directors, and photographers, because we all have a voice inside of us, and a vision, and our work speaks on our behalf when we're not there. But we all go through the same struggles, and it doesn't matter if you are a Hollywood director or if you are just if you're just starting out in photography and kind of discovering it for the first time. We all have the same struggles. It's just in a different form. So if we can learn from like people that are doing work on a high level, often that'll help us see that, hey, these people are doing stuff on a high level, but they started at a certain level, and they're going through the same struggles that I am. And you learn from these people. So it's a pretty exciting, it's been my baby for a while. So
now, is that out? Is that
not yet?
Not yet. So you're working on it, and
yeah,
maybe
be out in March.
End of March, is that what you said?
No, sometime in March. Sometime in March. I got four episodes recorded. I'm just new to audio. I've been, you know, as you probably knew, I was trying to do a podcast last year with Twip, and it was going, but I just didn't feel, my heart was really into it because it was too gear heavy for me, and there was other factors behind the scenes. But and Frederick was awesome to work with. He taught me a lot about the podcasting stuff.
Yeah, I see you're all set up right now. I got you on the video, and you got you got everything going.
Heil PR40.
That's right.
Thanks to Frederick.
Oh yeah, you put down some money too. That's good.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So, what was I going to ask about that? Oh, I totally lost my train of thought. You're doing the podcast. You're doing all that. Let's talk about your class this summer. So what are you going to be teaching? Or not this summer, but in April. You're going to be teaching at our portrait conference in April. April 9th, you're going to be doing the class. You're going to be doing a photo walk. So tell us about the class. What can people expect?
So Finding the Photographer's Vision is a class based on a lot of what I was talking about. It's how to find who you really are, who's your true self as an artist, because everybody has a unique voice inside them. And as much as if we try to copy each other, we all know that the work would all be different. It's because we have a unique voice. But what does that unique voice really say? And how do you find who you really are as an artist? So I go through the exercises that I developed over the years and how anyone can apply that right away to their photography. So if you're in a class and you're taking good notes and you're attentive and you apply what you learned, you'll become a better photographer right away. I mean, I'm not saying it's a shortcut, because it's not, none of this stuff is easy, but if you're willing to do the work, and it's all internal work, if you're willing to do the work, you will be a better artist regardless of what gear you use. Because the thing is, gear is fun to talk about, but it's gear needs to be like your partner in crime. It needs to be a tool that removes barriers, not a device that brings barriers into your creativity. you know, if it's a tool to remove barriers, now that and the tools I'm teaching in finding the photographer's vision, you really will excel quickly in developing your artistic voice.
Yeah, I like what you're saying. It's not a shortcut, but people need a direction. They need a path to go rather than just wandering. So you're going to point them in the right direction. That's that's what people need. You're going to do a photo walk as well, right?
Right. So right after that, we're doing Carry Less, Create More photo walk, which if you do both, then it's very powerful. But you can do either as well and get a lot from it. So Carry Less, Create More is really about creating with intention and creating within constraints. So you mentioned earlier, and I mentioned about the one lens, one camera, and that's a constraint. So if I know that if I really minimize what I'm carrying, so I'm carrying one camera, which has been my GX8, and one lens, which is my little Speedmaster 25, and it's manual focus, and it's not the sharpest lens, but it's got a lot of character, and I shoot all in black and white, and I'm operating within these constraints of imperfection. And that helps me focus on the most important thing, which is seeing. And then I teach to go create with intention. So we have flashcards that we hand out to everybody, and on the back of each flashcard is an intention for the photo walk, almost like an assignment. So you may get one that says lines and have an example of lines or low key or high key. And that's kind of where we start with the photo walk. But it's a great way to start building a body of work. You know, the problem that we have now with photography, I think more than ever, is that we're often creating in a casual mindset. Okay, you have a smartphone that takes really good photos. If it's in good light, it takes really good photos, and it focuses well and it exposes well. And all cameras are designed to focus well and expose well. That's like their main objective. So it becomes easy to go out and capture something that's in focus and exposed well, and therefore has good colors. But if you're creating casually, you're just kind of like stabbing in the dark. You're not really going in any direction. When you're creating with intent, now you're going on a mission, and you have a purpose, and that purpose is to build a body of work that speaks for you.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's what I need, actually, for sure. Well, speaking of me, this is something I'm interested in because I was reading through your about page and I love what you do here. Everyone should consider something like this for their about page. I love how you put together, you know, this is what I'm working on for 2016. These are my new ideas that I got going on. And one of them that caught my eye was aerial photography. What are you doing with that?
I have been exploring with aerial photography for like a year and a half now, I believe. So I started working with 3D Robotics. I helped them launch their Solo platform, and I've been playing with the Solo now. But prior to that, I was playing with the older models, which are a little more hands-on, and it was a little frightening to me, to tell you the truth, because there's all these wires you got to connect and stuff. And now with the Solo, it's kind of like the Phantom. You just kind of plug it in, you're flying, and how I approach it, I don't think of them as drones. I'm like, I don't drones. I think of like drones like bombing people and stuff. To me, I just think of it as a flying camera.
Right? Yeah, that's what I've been telling people. I'm like, hey, I bought a new camera. And they're like, oh, yeah. You did? Yeah, it flies.
Exactly. It's just like sometimes you need a light pole that's a tripod that's 5 feet. Sometimes you want a tripod to be 500 feet. You know,
right?
That's all. But it's really been a cool learning experience and a ton of fun. And my buddies at 3DR have been experimenting with hooking up GH4s to it and all sorts of wild things. If you're not used a Solo. I can't speak for the Phantom. I hear they're really good, but I never flown one. But for the Solo, it really is I've done some amazing things. I have a little helipad that was designed for me by my friends at Tether Tools. They'll be showing that in a video here soon. And I landed it on this little helipad, which is just pretty wild to do. I don't know. I just get excited about being able to. You know, we're always shooting at our eye level, but going up.
Right.
Hundreds of feet in the air is a completely different perspective.
Yeah, and you're constrained so much by that. You know, I mean, you can shoot at eye level and you can go all the way down to the ground. But like I was shooting when we were in Cincinnati at the Ohio River there, and it's like I've got like three or four different places I could stand. But as soon as I got the drone up in the air, it's like the possibilities are just endless. Like what direction do you want to shoot from? How close do you want to get? You know, how high do you want to be? be, and every single one of those changes completely changes what the image looks like, changes the perspective, and is really kind of, it's like, yeah, it just really opened my mind to like a whole different thing, but it's still photography, and it was really cool. What kind of stuff are you shooting when you're doing that?
I've been doing aerial panoramas.
Ooh.
Which I thought was really hard, but once I got the workflow down, I was like, oh, this is actually now a lot of fun.
So are you actually stitching then?
Yeah.
Really? So you get up in the air, you think, this is the shot I want, and how many images will you take then? Is that yaw? Am I saying the right word there?
Yeah. I just basically rotate from left to right or right to left. I don't go up and down and make a really complex stitch.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I just want to get the entire, like, downtown of Austin. And I just like the idea of, you know, it's a GoPro camera, so the sensor and whatnot's limited. But when you stack up a dozen of those shots by rotating slowly in Photoshop, man, it is really, really cool. And then I'll bring the images into some of the MacFun apps, and they have options for aerials as well.
Oh, really? Like specifically for aerial photography?
Yeah, it's... what's the name? I forgot the name of the app. I'll remember here in a second. It is called...
He's bringing it up.
Intensify.
Intensify.
And then I use Noiseless. But I use those with Photoshop. And man, I got some really cool stuff my first time out.
That is cool. So you said you'll take like 12 shots? Is that what you said? You'll take a whole bunch of shots, apparently. I mean, I was thinking
so
three.
Yeah, I just kind of line it up as best I can, leaving some overlap, snap it, and rotate until I kind of got what I think I need. And then later on in Photoshop, it actually will correct for the distortion in the GoPro. And then you do the stitching right there.
When you bring it into Photoshop and you ask it to do the panorama, you just do auto? I always just do auto.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
I do auto. But I think what I do is I think I do a lens correction first and then I stitch it.
Right. That makes sense. So you got your drone flying camera up in the air, you're pointed one direction, you'll just manually just rotate it a little bit, take a picture, rotate a little more, take another one, and away you go, huh?
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's really not a whole lot of science behind it, but that's what makes it fun, right? It's like I'm not really focusing on is it lined up right or whatever. I'm just kind of like trusting my eye.
That's cool. And the way that Photoshop can put those together nowadays, it's, I almost feel like some of these things, some of these, gimbals, pano head things, it's like, I don't even know if they're even necessary with the way that Photoshop can put these things together now. But yeah, that's awesome. I got to try that with aerial photography. Crazy. I saw the last thing. This is totally changing the subject. I don't know. Maybe you don't even want to talk about this. You said fatherhood on your website. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
What's going on there?
So it's my wife totally and I different. Are having a baby in middle of August.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's
Thank
awesome.
You. So between like July until probably sometime in October, I'm not really going to be on the road much.
That's probably a good idea.
Except for to go buy diapers or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. My 3-year-old son, he's finally using the potty. I think I may have, probably not my very last, may have changed my last diaper though. It's been a long time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah. We'll see. We'll see how that goes. All right. Last time you were on the show, you gave me a recommendation for a book, and we couldn't even remember what it was, but I know it was amazing. But I saw some other ones on your thing. Give us some ideas, some things we could go look up that are kind of along the lines of this photographer's vision. You mentioned one there. Give us some books we could be looking up.
Sure. I'm going to pull up my list right now.
I was kind of writing them down even.
Oops. Because I put a bunch that I may have forgotten about. So I'm a big fan of Daniel Pink's A Whole New Mind. I think all these apply to photography, at least what's happening in the world of photography. So A Whole New Mind is basically talking about how in America and in Western culture as a whole, the Industrial Revolution is long gone. Now you can't beat the price that China makes things for. It's impossible. I mean, it's made there, and anything that we have in this country is made there. So anything we make here is going to cost more. You like an iPhone, right? If you buy it unlocked, what is it, like $1,000? If it was made in the States, it'd probably be $10,000. I mean, what they do well is make things. But what we do well in the States in particular is is innovate and create up, come up with creative solutions. And what Daniel Pink is talking about is it's the future is art, automation, and Asia, right? So art is really what's driving our economy in the States, art and creative solutions. Which is why I feel it's never been a better time to be a creator, a photographer, or a designer, or whatever, because that's really the economy now. I mean, look at how many co-working spaces are popping up all over the country. It's crazy. Why? Because you got all these creative thinkers finding solutions either through code or through design or through photography or video or a mix, and a lot of. As I mentioned to you before we're recording, a lot of my friends that are designers are also providing photography. And a lot of my friends that are musicians are also doing video for their own music videos and videos for others. And it's all kind of coming together. But what is really being sold is not photography per se as the technique, because we're not selling we're not technicians. We're selling the art that happens to be made with a photographic instrument. And that's kind of what A Whole New Mind gets into. Let's see, Show Your Work. I'm still kind of working my way through, but Steal Like an Artist by Austin Kleon is really cool. I mean, really simple to read. You can read it in an afternoon. It's got a lot of good tips in there.
Yeah, I've read that one.
But I haven't seen the new one. Show Your Work is about like, okay, now you made your work. You got to show it, right? I mean, the obvious thing would come to mind, well, if you can show it in a gallery or coffee shop, that's cool. But it's accessible to everybody to show their work online.
Right, right.
And how do you do that in a way that helps you be a better artist? So that's kind of where I'm at with these books. Passive Least Resistance, I'm still digging into. I'm still digging into Woulda, Coulda, Shoulda and The Creative Habit. I've not quite touched that yet, but
no, this currently is awesome. Reading. No, that's great. Yeah, I mean, that's the best part. It's all work in progress, and I love the way you go about attacking all this. You know, the one thing I didn't want to bring up, but I'm going to do it anyway. So sure. Are we all done with small camera, big picture? Am I saying that? Did I say it right?
You did. Thank you. Yeah, the small camera, big picture as its own entity has ended last June.
Because that's what you've been known for a long time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it's interesting, though. I guess you said it earlier, though, as far as it's not just the gear. There's so much more to it as far as photography, right? I mean, that's kind of the idea behind that.
What I was finding is that as I was spending so much time talking about tech, specifically Micro Four Thirds, I was getting into tablets and stuff, the more time I spent with that, the less time I was spending developing myself creatively. You know, and the thing is, the tech changes, and how do you keep up with that? And how does an independent blogger like myself try to make a dent and keep up with someone like DP Review that's got Amazon money behind them and a staff of people? And quite honestly, it's like my heart wasn't into writing about tech. I will still write about tech. Occasionally, I will still talk about some gear that's really removing barriers, okay, as opposed to what most gear does is introduce barriers to creativity, which I think when gear is introduced that removes barriers, we should definitely be talking about it.
Give me some examples of that, because you said that a couple times now. Like, what are some things that are removing barriers? What are some examples of gear that's doing that?
Sure. Well, for me, my bread and butter cameras are the GH4s. I mean, I was mentioning to you earlier, I did an ad shoot for the Department of Health recently, and the budget was pretty tight. So if the GH4 didn't exist, I wouldn't have been able to shoot it, because we were initially talking about doing the shoot in a RED, because it required high resolution video vertically, because we were pulling frames to make posters. It was an augmented reality shoot, which is cool, because I've really been wanting to get into interactive photography. I feel that's going to be the next big thing. But the budget, the way it was I was like, I had to shoot it on the GH4. And you know what? The quality didn't suffer. It was awesome. I mean, we shot to the GH4. I pushed out to an Atomos Shogun. I had a Zoom H6 for audio. We had some new products from Tether Tools that helped as well. That'll be out soon. And we pushed the video signal to Video Village, where the client and the creative director could see the video. And it, you know, the work looks beautiful. Everyone's happy. They're talking that it could win some Addy Awards. And if I did not have the GH4, if the GH4 wasn't around, I would have had a pass on the shoot. In fact, the whole creative for the shoot would have had been passed since the budget for it didn't include a red. So by the time you rent a red, a full red kit for a day, you're looking at about $3,500 to $4,000 plus the tech and all that, and then the post-production is longer. So that would have added, say, an extra $9,000 to $10,000 onto the shoot, and it would have put it out of budget. So that gear, the GH4, removed barriers for me.
And what are some examples of things, you don't have to name cameras or whatever, but what are some of the things that you see out there that are, you keep saying things are adding barriers to it?
Yeah, so it like, you know, if you ever try to shoot video with the DSLR and all of a sudden the mirror moves up and you can't look through the viewfinder and you got to look at the back of the screen and you lose autofocus, the image doesn't look the same, everything's different. You're like, what just happened? I was shooting these stills, they were beautiful, they were gorgeous. So now, because I want to roll video, the camera looks like, the image looks like garbage and it's not inspiring. That's a barrier.
Right.
So now you got to spend time and you got to figure out, how do I get my camera to do what it always was doing? The only thing that I've done now is simply hit the record button for video. I don't want to do this. And it becomes complicated and it's not inspiring and it's a barrier. You stop. Another thing for people is like software. It's like I'm a Premiere Pro user. I also use Final Cut 10, but my mainstay right now is Premiere Pro. And I put in a lot of time. I've been using it since 1997 or 98, somewhere around there, when it was like one of the early versions. But if you tell somebody, okay, great, you want to go and shoot video now, you got your GH4, and you got to go take a weekend class to learn Premiere Pro, and then they look at the interface and like, what's going on? It's so different. That's a barrier. It's a huge barrier, which is why we saw Adobe introduced a Lumetri panel recently, which is like the it's for color inside of Premiere Pro, which is very similar to the develop to a module in Lightroom. Mm. They're making it more photographer friendly because Adobe knows, they know that, okay, what's the, you know, the market for photographers that really need to shoot video and want to shoot video is huge, but it's untapped. You know, so last year at out of Chicago, I taught how to edit video on your iPad with the Replay app, and that removed a huge barrier, and a lot of people now still use it based from that class. So when you get these barriers introduced, it's like, you know, my whole photo walk, Carry Less, Create More, is based on my Carry Less, Create More manifesto, which one of the things is this product introducing a barrier or is it removing them? If it's introducing a barrier that I can't figure out within 30 minutes, I just don't bother.
Right, right.
And I think everybody should be like that too, because, you know, organizations want your money and there ain't nothing in photography that's cheap. And if they're making stuff that's hard to use, don't buy it. Don't make stuff that's easier to use.
Right. And it's also sometimes for me, my biggest thing is it's not the technology, but just like, oh, I've got my ultra wide angle lens. I've got a, you know, telephoto. I got this. I'm like, all right, I'm going to switch between these lenses. Ooh, should I put this on? Ooh, should I put that on? And like you're saying, you just carry the one lens, one camera, and you don't have to worry about any of that stuff.
That's right.
So I don't know. I go back and forth on that for sure. Hey, you mentioned something about interactive photography. What are you talking about? Interactive photography.
So I, as a lot of people know, I've been working with Cinemagraphs, and before that, it's called Animated Portraits, all the way back to 2009.
And explain for people what that is, in case they don't know.
Sure. So a video file, an MP4 or an MOV. MP4 is what we upload to YouTube, Vimeo, Instagram. That's a container. Inside that container is two types of audio. Two types of medias. You got still photos at roughly 30 frames per second, 30 JPEGs, and you have an audio track. That's your video file. So a Cinemagraph basically copies one of those JPEGs on a separate layer on top. We mask out an area, and underneath it you see video move. That's a Cinemagraph. And they come in various forms. You can make loops and different things. But that's essentially what a Cinemagraph is. Interactive photography is something I've been working on for a while, and it adds other elements of what you would usually get with a smartphone. The smartphone is the key, the interactive portion, because everybody's got a smartphone on their person. So imagine you have a baby portrait. I mean, we're seeing Apple do it now with the live photos. You know, when you touch it, it comes alive. It has audio. It's got a video. That's great. I mean, but you have to shoot it all with an iPhone, and it's very difficult to shoot it right because the timing's got to be right. But imagine if you could take a photographer's eye, a trained eye, with a camera, say like a GH4, that's essentially recording 38.5 megapixels images per second, which is the 4K video. And you can access all that content, the video, the photos, the audio, because you're capturing it all at the same time. And then you apply techniques, technologies built into an iPhone, like the accelerometer, the audio, the haptic feedback, all of that. And how would that interplay with a photograph and or series of photographs in a video wrapper or a container? That's what interactive photography is.
It
sounds kind of complex.
No, it's crazy, but I totally agree with the whole thing about everyone's got a smartphone, and it's like that's how most people are seeing images now. It could be more than just a static display of pixels looking a certain way and just sitting there.
Virtual reality, man. I mean, you know, I got into that in the early 90s, back when I was in high school. It's like, this is the future, and then it was, and it wasn't. Now it is.
Right, you know? Now it is again.
Yeah. Now it is again. Hopefully it's not like 3D and goes away again, because I thought 3D was cool, but it's just another way to experience visual information. So like with VR, you got to have a spherical image. And so you see like cameras by Ricoh, a camera recently by Nikon, it does spherical images. So it goes inside the VR headset. And now you're interacting. If you have a headset on and you're not the creator, you're the consumer of that media. Now you're actually interacting with someone's photography. That's a form of interactive photography.
Yeah,
that makes sense. And I think that photography is not going anywhere. It's just transforming or adding other elements in just a still photo. You know, don't forget photography was designed just to capture something that was real, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then what happened to the painters at the time that were being commissioned to paint, say, like the Great Wall of China and bring it back to the Pope, right? Those guys were done overnight, done. Because photography came along and it could instantly replicate what these people would spend months and years learning. So what happened to the artists, to the painters? Well, they went into surrealism. And surrealism was really just their experiments of stuff that they were painting just to kind of work out techniques and stuff. So then the creativity, painters used creativity to separate themselves from the photographers because they knew that they couldn't compete with this new technology that removed a giant barrier. Now anyone can go out and make a photorealistic image.
Yeah.
Okay. So with photography now, we're at the point where for all intents and purposes, the quality is good enough. Tell me how to find a bad camera now. They're all really good. You're just finding the right camera that fits your need. Right, your creative vision, which hopefully you learn in classes like mine, right?
Exactly. Yes. Uh-huh.
Sorry, I had to plug it, but then the thing is, okay, if the cameras are doing all this heavy lifting for us, all the technical heavy lifting, we're at a point where it's good enough. What remains is the artist's creativity. That's what separates him or her from other people, and the technology will always change. But you only have, you know, yourself to really engage that creativity and that technology and make something that's unique to you.
Man, you just blow my mind every time we talk to you. It just goes right so deep. It's like, oh, geez. I feel like I'm like totally getting you. And then, oh, man, I lost you. But I love it. And it's great. It's so much. I'm going to have to go back and listen to my own podcast, I think, to get everything out of that. Anything else you want to throw our way? Anything else you want to talk about a little bit? I mean, this has been great.
Well, I think there's a lot of fear in art as an industry, and just as an aspect of creation. But there's a lot of opportunity as well. We all need to realize that we ourselves were created. We just didn't drop from the sky. We are created by two people, and it is inherent in us each to create. And we see this in children. They create without any thought, any like anything. They're just creating for the joy of creating. And somewhere along the line, as we are dealing with life as adults, we forget about that part of life. And it's such a rich part of life. And I'm not just talking about creating art, but we create, I mean, something as silly as your breakfast. You put some creativity into your breakfast, you know, when you can. And or, you know, what I you know, it's just various things. And we can't lose touch of that creativity. If we're creating based on who we truly are, right, that work is authentic, it's real, and it's honest. And no one can knock it. No one can knock it. So I think that there is room in the world of photography for everybody, for enthusiasts that are saying, hey, I got an iPhone, but I think I want a little more. Or those that are really deep into the art. Maybe they're retired or they just do it on the side. Or the weekend warriors is a great ton of opportunity for those that have a day job, but say, hey, you know what? All this gear is expensive. How can I make money with the gear I have so I can just upgrade my gear as it comes and not have to worry about how I'm going to pay for this gear? So there's plenty of opportunity for them. And I don't think those people really, I don't think the weekend warriors affect the professional market at all, because professionals are working at, if that's your bread and butter, you should be working on a higher level than what someone that a weekend warrior would work for. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of opportunity there. I know a lot of people are scared right now because of what's happening in photography, but if you're present to what's available, you will see a lot of opportunity. And you have to address your fears and acknowledge them and then move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. There he goes again.
Sorry, man.
No, I love it. I love it. Yeah, I mean, we're not getting any, you probably should shoot it at F8, and oh, man, it's a whole different level here today.
There's no shortcuts. There's no shortcuts to photography. Sorry, you know. I see it every time I go to these big trade shows. It's like someone's pitching something, and I'm like, man, what is, you got like snake oil somewhere? You know, not everybody, but there's always some people there, and I'm like, you know what? Great that you're trying, but you know, there's no shortcuts to making a image with substance. There just is not.
Right.
You have to practice. You have to practice, and you have to put your heart and soul into it.
No, I love it. I love it. All right, so you're going to be there in April, April 9th.
Super excited.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be a great show with all the people we got, and we're excited that you're coming back again. And you're doing your photo walk and all this stuff. It's going to be super cool. Where can we find you online to learn more about you, follow what you're doing?
You can go to julioshorio.com. If that is hard for you to spell, go to creatorspath.org.
All right, very good.
We'll take you right into the blog.
We'll put links in the show notes, no doubt about that. So thank you so much. Thanks for sharing everything. I love that you think about this stuff so deep and then to come out here and share it all with us. I love it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, man.
So, yeah, we will see you in April. All right. Thanks, Julio. All righty. So if you're interested in shooting people, photos in any way, if you're interested in portrait photography, you want to get to the Out of Chicago Portrait Conference April 8th and 9th with all those all-day workshops on April 10th. I mean, really, look at this. It's some of the best portrait photographers in the world. Lindsay Adler, Tom Rouse, Jen Rosenbaum, the one and only Michael Novo, Julio Shorio, Detlef Kurtke, and it goes on and on. And you are going to learn to shoot people. You're going to learn to shoot families. You're going to, I should say, photograph families. You are going to learn, like I said, Jen Rosenbaum, boudoir photography. It's all there. It's going to be great. It's going to be so much fun. We're going to have models. You're going to be shooting people. And it's right here in Chicago. So please join us. Go to outofchicago.com and sign up. And we will see you next week on the Out of Chicago podcast. Thank you to Julio Shorio. See you guys next time.